Hello! Welcome to Why Not Both, the podcast all about how our multiple passions and interests shape our identity and our lives. My name is Pam Schaefer, and I am a musician and therapist in Los Angeles, and I also happen to be your host. This podcast is produced by Laura Studeris, and for this season, we've partnered up with Under the Radar magazine. If you like what you hear, you can hang out with us on social media. We are on Twitter and Instagram at WNB, the podcast. And if you really, really like what you hear, please support us on Patreon. We are under Why Not Both Podcast. When you join our Patreon, you get a whole bunch of really cool behind the scenes stuff and you get to chat with us. And that's pretty awesome. Thank you so much for your support, and I hope you enjoy our interviews. For this week's episode, we had a wonderful time getting to chat with Amber Iman. I hope you enjoy our interview.
Well, welcome to Why Not Both.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining. Thank you for negotiating time zone differences.
All good. No worries at all.
It's funny. In the years prior, I would ask people things like, so what are the multiple things you do? And now I'm just like, how's it going?
Right. It's like, okay? Are you surviving? Are you okay? I think I'm doing as well as can be expected at this point. Like, what year are we? How many years have we been doing this? I'm somehow still here. So I guess that means it's a good day.
Yes. I haven't checked yet on TikTok, but do you know of the Bones or No Bones pug?
Oh, I do know bones and no bones. I do. That's hilarious.
Does Noodle have bones today?
I don't know how Noodle's doing today. That is hilarious.
I was like, I feel like that's where we are mentally. Yep. We're just like, does the 13-year-old pug have bones?
Yep. We should ask Noodle. He will let us know how we are.
Noodle is the sage of our times. How it's interesting, because I was thinking about especially stuff with Broadway and with shows, and like self-disclosure, I'm a musician and I haven't played a show now in years, and it felt like, at least for me, like I was like, things are tentatively going again, and like I had this like cautious optimism, but I didn't invest in it yet. It was kind of like one foot in, one foot out, and now I'm like, I feel like I'm playing like pandemic hopscotch. I guess, how is that feeling on your end with things like being kind of like open, closed?
For me, it's kind of sad and traumatic, actually. Yeah. I was in a Christmas carol in San Francisco. We closed a week early because 8 cast members, one crew member in the span of like 4 days got COVID.
Yeah.
And it was just really like, it was actually quite traumatizing and sad, just because we are still figuring this thing out, and there aren't really rules. There's not really a handbook. Equity says one thing. The Broadway League says another thing. Producers can say what they want. So like, at a time when, you know, first of all, it's a holiday season. So many of us were away from our families over in California. Mm-hmm. And like the day that we're all, first of all, we had lost like 3 people first. And it got to the point where we were in this very weird show of, we were the San Francisco company and there was a touring company. The touring company was on hiatus for a week because they had so many COVID cases. So they brought one of their cast members from the tour, as if this is like Hamilton or something. They brought this guy from, I think they were in LA, to San Fran. He got to do one show. So we were like, okay, we can make it through our final week. Because mind you, this is December 22nd. We're just trying to get through Christmas so we can end this thing. And the next day we all go to get tests. And like, you're just watching your cast members like being ticked off one by one like it was Hunger Games. And it came to a point where it was no longer if my test result is positive or negative, because like we know there's no more show. We've lost five people. It's am I going to be quarantined alone in San Francisco for Christmas and New Year's because it's the 23rd and the whole 10-day thing? Like just to watch people realize, damn, I'm stuck here by myself in an apartment for a holiday. Like this didn't have to happen if we had greater precautions. And then of course we survive through that, and then you have producers who want to nickel and dime you and not pay you for that final week and not give you your insurance weeks. So it's like it's taken on a whole new thing. Like we're fighting new things. We're trying to stay alive. We're trying to get money. We're trying to get insurance weeks. Like I came out of that thinking I was going to go into a show that I've been like waiting to do. That's been pushed back three times. It was supposed to start in February, and of course that just got bumped to July, and I had to say no to three other shows just to keep my February open. So now as soon as that show is pushed, I run back to the other three shows that have already recast. So now I'm sitting here with no jobs, still with no insurance, with no money. Like, I am beyond traumatized. I have had a foot in, a foot out. I've swam in the pool. Like, it's been overwhelming just how crazy this is because we're not through. We're not done. Everybody's like, Broadway is back. It's like, no, Broadway is trying. Broadway is doing the best it can. And that's not even speaking to regional and tours and everybody else who is doing theater, because we love to only talk about Broadway like it is the only thing that exists. And it's like there are scores of people who are trying to survive, who are trying to get back in the saddle. And it's insane to just watch the. It's like hop. It, what is that? It's like musical chairs. They open, they close. They open, they close. It's like we really haven't figured out how to do this thing yet, and the pandemic is still pandemicking. Like we're not at the end of it. We're still, Omicron is still roaring. So it's a lot. It really is a lot to process. And I've been talking to my therapist about like I don't think we've even begun to understand the toll that this is taking on mental health and wellness. Like to be in a show, a workshop, anything during this time, and your biggest fear is like, I cannot catch it because it's going to derail an entire production. Like the fear that you carry in your body, like you go and get those tests three times a week and you are holding your breath, waiting for an email, waiting for a phone call, waiting for a text. Like people don't understand how crazy it is to know that like if I get it, I can put 100 people out of work. Like it's not even funny. It's like you live like a monk, you're scared, you want to have a life, but you don't want to endanger other people. So you're trying to maneuver, you're trying to take care of yourself. It's a lot. It really is more than I think any of us knew we were signing up for. So yeah.
So glad you're speaking to that, because I think especially people who are arts enthusiasts, and not to say people can't be artists that aren't doing it as a profession. That is literally what the podcast is about, is you can do what you want. But I think that people who aren't in the field don't quite have the scope of what is happening to artists like yourself. And so it's so funny, like also self-disclosure, I'm a therapist. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry that you just had to speak something that's traumatic, because sometimes that is so hard on that level. I'm like, and so like on that level, I want to honor what you said. And then like on the level of other people not understanding when artists express how tenuous this whole situation has been, I'm glad that you laid it out so that people get that that's what you're going through, because then your job is to present this other world to people. And it's how to, it's like I'm trying to wrap my mind around how to even perform in those circumstances when you're under so much pressure. And I'm like, oh, that is mind-boggling.
I because it's like you no longer can really go to work and be completely lost in the storytelling and the character. Like your mind is split into so many different like concerns, areas of concern. I'll never forget one of my cast members. She was standing on the corner shaking, like crying and shaking, because she was realizing like the guy, her scene partner, who she's like married to in the show and has to like make out with on stage, he got COVID. And she's like, I kiss him in the mouth like every night. Like, of course I have COVID. Like, she's like, how do I not? Just like, there's certain things that, like, she's on stage and I see her eyes when the scene is coming up where she has to kiss somebody. And you can tell that she's like freaking out, because also, how haven't we restaged this scene where we're not kissing? Like, how have we not taken precautions to like limit personal like contact? Like, there's just so many things that are at red that are like going on in your spirit. I remember another one of my cast members, the first time we got like the big three people are down, he was like, I feel like COVID is in this building. Like, it's here. And it's just a matter of time before we're all knocked down by it. And it was such a profound thing of like, yeah, like if three people got it, it's here. It's just, this is not a if, it's just a when. And then that next week we watched it just when all of us did. Like, it just, and like even crazier is we started looking at the numbers and I was like, wait a
Oh
minute,
my
we lost eight guys. And the realization of, oh, all the guys shared dressing rooms and the
God.
women had their own. And we had two girls who shared a dressing room, and they started picking up on the trend of all the guys getting sick, and they asked our company management if they could split up and have separate dressing rooms. Mind you, there are four empty dressing rooms, so this could have happened. And the company management told them no. And because actors are smarter than everybody, they started getting dressed in shifts. So one girl would put on her makeup and the other girl would sit there with her mask, and then they would switch so that none of they were never both sitting there without masks on. But can you imagine? Imagine all the men got, none of the women got sick. All the men got sick because we're like, of course, you go in your dressing room to like take your mask off and breathe and like have downtime. And that's when Corona was just in there working its magic. It
Oh my
just,
God.
it blew our minds just to realize like we were in danger at work. Like,
I'm
that's how
mad.
we got it.
On your behalf, I'm mad that you had to figure out your own system of staying safe. Like, that's what makes me so mad.
Exactly.
I'm like,
Exactly. It was just like, it was ridiculous. And you have poor actors, like we're all walking on stage sometimes with our mask on because we forget, but also because we kind of just want to do it with our mask on at this point because this just feels stupid. Like,
Oh my
it's nuts.
God.
It's absolutely nuts. Like, I hope people are not fooled by all these, Broadway social media accounts where you just see everybody is smiling and, oh my God, we're so happy to be doing a show. People are terrified. Like, people are doing the best that they can. They're trying to manage having a life, not catching corona. Like, there's still the fear that you get it and like the effects on your body can be long term. Like, I have friends who got corona in 2020 who still don't have their smell and taste back. Like,
Oh
we still are figuring out the long term effects of these things. So God save us.
Yeah, I'm just like one of my clients actually referred to this as the junior year of the pandemic, and I just like I feel like both of us had one of those moments where it's so interesting as a therapist. Usually we're not going through the same thing at the same time as our clients. Like, we may have had experience with something similar, but it's not often concurrent. And this is like super concurrent. And what my client said was junior year of the pandemic. And like it hit me right when they said it as well. And we both had this look on our face where it was like you could tell that we were just internally like the spinning beach ball. But like we had that moment like synchronously. I was just like, oh, that's well, that's real. Okay.
And my
And
eye
like
therapist was saying, like, for her, this is a time when everyone's depressed, and it's kind of worse than 2020 because in 2020, there was no hope. Like, everything was shut down, there were no jobs. So we were all in the same boat. But
Yeah.
now it's like the carrot is being dangled. Like, the theater's open, now it's closed. You have a job, now you don't. Who has it? So it's all 2022 feels worse because we can see the light and we have our toes, a bit in the pool. But now, with the like musical chairs of it all, it just feels like you can't really like take off. You can't really catch your breath before you get another piece of bad news. So this time for me definitely feels worse than 2 years
Yes,
ago.
that is what I was just like, you have an astute therapist, and or we have a confirmation bias, because that has been maybe a little bit of both. Because that has been my personal experience, and the experience of like my clients and friends, is what you're talking about even comes back to like the lack of protections, where it's like at this point that we know ways to protect people, and the fact that we are choosing not to do them or to cut corners is infuriating, like especially hearing that like you were in danger at your job, and that you figured out this like mask rotation makeup getting dress system. I'm thinking how do we advocate for people more? Because I was thinking about the work that Laura, who's the producer of the podcast, wrote about you in Shondaland, and I was reading about what you do, and I was just like, oh my god, she's amazing. And I was thinking, I was just like, how do we advocate for people in the system? Because the system is so broken.
It's unfortunate. It's like the deeper you get into this business and industry, it kind of breaks your heart more, because you realize it is just about money first. And we, the actors who make it happen, are like 17th on the list. You know what I mean? It's like, if you don't want to work by these rules, we'll replace you, because they know this is a time when people are so hungry to have work. That's like, you can make noise if you want, and we will have a 17-year-old in your role, and we will pay them half of what we have to pay you because they have less credits. Like, it's show business for a reason. It's about the business of it, which is so unfortunate. You know, the fact that we were doing Christmas Carol, which is a show where we talk about money and greed, and that's the show where the producers are like, yeah, we won't pay you for that last week or give you insurance. Fuck you. Like, that's what it felt like. Like, of all the shows for producers to be greedy, it was like, on a Christmas Carol during Christmas week? Like, it doesn't get any more ridiculous than that. If people will be that greedy at that time of the year, like, there's no hope. It's kind of like, we just have to advocate for each other and take care of each other, because the higher ups, like, they don't care. Just like we thought, you know, this pandemic or this pause cured like racism and sexism and misogyny. He's like, no, these people who were making money before 2020 are still making money now. Their hearts have not changed. If it's not broken, they're not going to fix it. So we literally have to look out for each other and ourselves. And I mean, I always say they can't fire all of us. So if we all join together, you know what, and fight back, like, it's really, really unfortunate. But I just don't see a world where things are changing until like the people who have the loudest voices and the largest paychecks make noise. Like, they're not going to listen to us down here at the bottom without the Tonys and fancy things. But like, the people who we need to be speaking out to make the actual change, like, it's just really quiet from them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why we see so little change, because until it affects producers' bank accounts, they don't care.
Yes.
So it's like, we have to find a way to shake it up on that level. That's how we'll actually see the change that we need to see.
Well, I love that you said they can't fire all of us.
They literally can. And like, producers, most of them can't act, sing, or dance. So it's not like they can put themselves on the stage. Like, they need us. They can't literally get rid of all of us. So if we could all join together and have the same focus and the same fight, we would make some noise. But that takes time. It takes time.
It takes time, and it takes organization, and it takes, because I think that what you said is astute in a way of like, we have to affect the people in power in a way that genuinely affects them. And that way, usually, if they experience what they perceive as like loss of financial income, that seems to be the way. Because usually when someone does something that seems completely irrational and terrible, it's because someone's making money.
Right.
It's so bizarre, like, thinking about this across fields. And that was, I mean, initially, before all of this began, that was how the podcast started, was talking to people in different fields who have multiple passions about how they interact with those, how that informs who they are. And now it's like, during this circumstance, it's taken on like just all new dimensions. Like, like hearing you speak to the predicament that you're in of like, I want to engage in my job and my passion and my purpose, and I can't without feeling mortally afraid that I'm going to accidentally cost other people their jobs potentially or have long-term health risk.
Yes.
Like, ah! Like that is maddening. I'm like, I'm so sorry you're in that situation. And I'm like, so like, what you been doing to stay medium sane? It's been a weird time. People have done some really interesting things though to stay sane.
Yeah, I mean, I'm honestly not sure if I am sane, to be completely honest. Like, I feel like it just keeps getting worse and worse. But like, I came home for Christmas, and that was the joy. It was like, okay, I at least get to be home with my family. And then my poor grandmother passed away on New Year's Eve, and my paternal grandmother, and then my father got COVID the week of the funeral. It was literally like one of those moments where I was like, I don't know who I pissed off in another life. Like, I don't really know why. It's just like boom, 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 boom. Like, I cannot catch my breath. And then like the show in February got pushed back. Like, all of that happened in the same week. At the same time, we actors are on a thread trying to figure out how to fight producers. Like, I was just kind of sitting in my parental home in Georgia, just like, I just need a break from life. Like, it's just too many things happening at the same time, and I don't have the capacity for even one of these things. So honestly, like, staying home, like not going back to New York, because I looked at the weather and saw that it was 1 degree, and I was like, I don't understand what one is. Like, 1 o'clock, one singular sensation. What is one? That's stupid. So like,
oh no.
Staying in Georgia and like letting my mom cook me dinner and breakfast, and like sleeping in my childhood bed, seeing my friends, like just being away from the city, I think has helped me stay a little bit more sane, you know, continuing therapy. And I have a really gracious therapist. She's just like, because she knows, like, I don't have insurance right now. So she's like, we can run up a tab until you can't. Like, don't worry. I just want you to have what you need while you need it, instead of being worried about how you're going to pay. So I've been very blessed to be helped by a lot of people who are just so gracious. And I'm, you know, learning to grant myself grace with this, which is so hard, because I'm also at an age in my life where I'm like, I should just be doing better. Like, I know that time is a construct and calendars, you know, blah, blah, blah. Especially for artists, we have to look at our lives a little bit differently. But like, especially for women, you get past 30 and you're like, I just feel like I'm living irresponsibly. Like, I should just have more savings. I should just have like a house and a spouse and like just more things. And as these slow months keep passing, where we're not really back and we're not really working, it's just kind of stressing me out. So I'm just trying to be gracious with myself and like, know that it's all going to happen in the right time, and I just need to focus on my wellness and like making sure that I'm okay.
That's a beautiful thing to be doing, frankly, is just existing and practicing grace and also like receiving care. Like, that's sometimes so hard. Like, the pressure that you mentioned, like, I definitely felt that of like, once you get past 30, you're like, so
yeah.
Quoi? And it's sometimes really hard to receive care from others when you have those expectations of yourself. And I'm like, oh, that's actually something really beautiful that you're doing, because that's really hard. like, oh yeah, I can accept care. I can take care of myself too. I can slow down and do this and know that like nothing bad is going to come of taking care of myself.
Absolutely.
Like, that's actually very difficult.
It is, because I mean, we, especially in theater, we come from the, you know, push through, show must go on. Like, we don't go to the doctor unless like something is broken, like we cannot function, like a limb is falling off. We don't come from like self-care, and like, I used to think I had to earn vacations. Like, I would want to go somewhere and I'd be like, but I haven't done anything to earn. And it's like, wow, I really thought I had to like work hard, like to the point of like exhaustion, to deserve rest. Like I didn't come from just a family or a lifestyle of loving on yourself, of like giving yourself rest. So there's so much unlearning also that's happening, of like just rethinking how we've been operating, the stresses that we've been putting on our bodies, that rest is okay, that it doesn't mean you're lazy or you'll fall behind. Because that's the biggest thing, is I have so many girlfriends who will not leave the country because they're afraid they're going to miss an audition. Like it's so bonkers to just live your life like kind of on hold because you're just waiting on the phone to ring. But that's how we've been like conditioned. It's like you're always available. You never get to rest because resting means you're going to miss out on that big break or that big moment. But I just believe that like what is for me will not pass me. And if it's my job and I'm in Jamaica, it'll find me in Jamaica. Like the internet still works. Like I'm like, we can't keep just living for the phone calls and living like it just it's so pointless. And I see a lot of my friends slowly start to unlearn and relearn. And like, it causes them a lot of anxiety, but they're like, I'm gonna take a vacation. And it's such a huge thing for them to like take 5 days for themselves, and actually invest in rest. Like but it's beautiful. It's beautiful that that's what's come out of the past 2 years, is us unlearning and relearning and really learning how to love on ourselves.
Yes, like especially when I want to make sure. I was like, is your dad okay? Like, did
He
he?
is
Okay.
fine. It was so touching. It was just like, it was crazy because also now, like, the symptoms are different. Like, he woke up literally the day of his mother's funeral and was like, I might have corona, but it might be the flu, but also it might just be grief. And like, my mother was like, yeah, like, none of his symptoms screamed corona. And my mom was like, to be honest, she lost her mother when I was like 11 or 12. She was like, I felt all of those things the day of my mother's funeral. So we really had no idea and couldn't get him a test until after the funeral. And it was like, yes, he had corona. Like it was just an insane amount of time. And just to think like when he needed people to be most close to him, like we couldn't hug him on the day of his mom's funeral. Like it was just like, we need a break.
Like a spa day, but like maybe like a spa sabbatical, like a good
Yes.
8 week
Yes.
spa.
And just somebody take my phone and just let me just unwind.
Yes, like when you were talking about being back in like your family home and also staying away from New York at the moment, that was really funny. You're like, I definitely now have one singular sensation stuck in my head. I was like, 1 degree, that's too few. That is
Like, I don't even know what that, like, I can't compute that in my human brain. Like, what is a one? Like, I have a hard enough time when it's like 33. It's like, okay, that's like cold, but like, how much clothes? Like, how many layers? But I don't want to like burn up, Like, you're trying to figure out how to dress.
Oh my
What
God.
do you wear for 1 degree? Like, what?
I was like, that's a no just from me. Like, being from LA, I know I'm so spoiled in that way, but I'm like,
Oh.
that's not enough degrees for me.
No, it's not. Like, I can't function in 1 degree.
My God. That
Oh.
and even that feels like a weird metaphor for even like the overwork that you were talking about and that extraordinary pressure, and having to like relearn that like we deserve rest, like just because we're here. Like, we don't have to like just, whip ourselves into a frenzy before we can rest, or like, even like heaven forfend, experience something pleasurable. And like when I thought of like the 1 degree in New York, I was just like, that's all it's got. It's just got
Yeah,
one. You don't get anything.
one.
It's just
Nope.
like,
Nope.
yeah, in my mind, that's what it like kind of signified. And I was like, oh, that's so weird. Yeah, because like it has been interesting. Like, that's what I was thinking about when, like, I'd been talking to people about what they're doing to, and you said, I am not saying I was like low key, like, none of us are. Everyone's like medium, sort of, kind of lukewarm about sanity currently.
Yes.
But it's led people to either try things that like they either didn't have time for before, and then like something, like they got nerfed from their job, like things like that, where it's like people just couldn't do their jobs, like you described, for months. So they just like, they're like, okay, I'll just try something else, because what else am I going to do? And a lot of people leaned into that, the idea of exactly what you're talking about, of like, wait, like, were we actually designed to be like doing stuff nonstop? And the answer is like, no.
Absolutely, 100%. No.
No, like it's funny that you even mentioned that. Like I joked with my partner that last night he and I were cosplaying normal people, because we actually like watched a show together. Like that was like the whole evening. I was like, we didn't co-work on anything. We didn't like have to make it like some like big whatever, I love, for us, a big whatever is like getting takeout and eating it like far away from people, like rabid squirrels. But it's like, but I was like, we actually took the time to just sit and watch a funny show and hang out on the couch and talk. And I was just like, oh yeah, we can just do that. Because like both of us, I think, feel that pressure. And like he's also in entertainment. He works in like music engineering and whatnot. And same thing. I mean, people are still pressuring him for things like, oh, well, you got to get the mixes in, like, so it can be mastered in this period of time. And we're like, literally, what's the rush? What are you possibly rushing for? Qua? And so, yeah, for, I think that we might be in a similar boat of you, of like, like that being in multiple environments where it's like, if you're not performing in a way, you're gonna get left behind. And to realize like, there is no behind or forward. There's just
Absolutely.
being.
That's it.
What's it like talking to people in different parts of the country even? It's interesting to hear about kind of what's like the cultural landscape currently. And I'm curious, like, what is it like in Georgia? Like, are you from like a small town or a big town? Like, where are you from? And like, how does it feel there currently?
It's weird. I mean, Atlanta, I don't know if you know this, but Atlanta didn't have COVID apparently, because that's how everyone acts down here. Like, I go into stores and I'm like, oh, so we're just not wearing the mask. Like, we're just not. Like, okay, cool. Like, you just, I'm just like, I don't, and I get confused and I like Google, like, what is the law? What are the things? Because oh God, and a couple of days ago I had a gig in Florida in Fort Myers, and like I've never seen that much camouflage and flags in a long time. And it was just like, oof, like, okay, like, well, I know where I am. But just like down south, it's a little different down here, because it's almost like you feel like people don't wear masks, and it's like a challenge. Like, they're challenging you to say something, they're challenging you to feel anything. Like, they want to start a fight, they want you to say something to them so that they can go viral, or it's just so. I find myself staying home a lot. I find myself just hanging with like a small group of friends. Like, we'll just have a Uno night, we'll just have play a couple games. But like, it kind of is like paying to just stay home and just to stay away from certain areas, certain types of people. It just, because we're already like on a thread, you know what I mean? Like, my mental health is already teetering, and I just don't need to be put in any positions where I'm gonna just lose my crap in public and punch somebody. So I just like, Atlanta cannot be trusted. I don't know what people are doing. And I feel like maybe it's different because I'm an artist. Like, maybe I feel like I've had more COVID tests than these people have. Like, me catching COVID is more of a big deal than like some of these people based on what they do for their living. So maybe they don't understand it at the level that I get it. I'm always just trying to rationalize how people are just out here at clubs and parties. Like, and so maybe they just don't understand, and I'm trying to make sense of it, but also just staying home because, yeah, it's just safer this way.
That what you said resonates so much, that it's like, when you said like, because I'm an artist, I can see how much this affects people, because, and on a very practical level, you saw that. But it's also that sensitivity to like, that this does affect other people. Like, my choice to wear a mask is not just for me.
Right.
And it's fascinating to me, the psychology of people that want to turn it into an argument or an act of defiance. And I'm just here going, like, why do you want to pretend you're oppressed? What's that about? Like, what?
Yeah. Because my question is always like, what does it cost you to wear a mask? Like, it costs you nothing.
Yeah.
But one of my friends was saying about, you know, certain groups of people, they want to be oppressed so badly. They've never been oppressed.
Right.
And now they have a chance to be oppressed because we're asking you to do something that literally might save your life. Like, imagine being that dumb. And, you know, like, we're not, you can still do everything you want to do. You just have a piece of something on your, like, it doesn't even... You can't even honestly start thinking about it because you'll just get more upset. Like, you just, if you go down the rabbit hole, you literally will not be well when you start thinking about what people are fighting against.
No, you just spiral. And there are people that are friends of mine and people I've interviewed in other countries. And like I said, like, if when I practice the defense mechanism of intellectualizing things, I'm like, oh, how fascinating, like the different ways that people are reacting. And then when I actually connect to the emotions of it, just like you said, it's like, oh no, I'm in the abyss now.
Yep.
And so, yeah, like that idea though, of like the people who haven't experienced oppression want to, like, I find it fascinating and horrifying. So very strange to me. I guess, like, I was chatting with a friend last night, where he was actually looking for a Black therapist, and he lives in Minnesota. And so he was on Psychology Today. And so he Googled Black or African American ADHD specialist. And what literally came up was a bunch of white people. And he was just like, he was joking with me. He's like, so does Psychology Today not see color?
Yeah, it does. I literally did the same thing. I had to switch to therapy for Black girls because I did the same thing on that same website, Psychology Today. And I was like, I'm looking for a Black woman. And it was like, Karen from Kentucky. I was like, clearly this is not what I asked for. Like, so clearly this is not the criteria that I put into this website. It's maddening. It is.
And like, and I was saying to him that it's very weird being like, my background is Ashkenazi Jewish. And so like, I'm in this weird liminal space where like, I'm not white, but I'm perceived as white by most people. Like, there are some people that want to like kill me with tiki torches, but they're few and far between and usually conspiracy theorists. And then like, I'm also definitely not a person of color. Like, I'm pretty much see-through. So it's like, I don't have that experience. I have this like, in-betweeny experience. But we were talking about how very strange that is, like coming from groups of people who have been historically oppressed in different ways, and then like the group of people I'm in like has privilege but doesn't have privilege but does have privilege, but like it's the same thing as, is it open or is it closed? It's like musical chairs privilege. It's very weird. And like we were talking about people who haven't experienced that want so badly to be oppressed, and we were just like we were saying, they're like, do they think it's fun? Like, do they think that it's like, do they think that there's something about it? Maybe because like we are like really bonded to each other in a way, and like we have like more community support in a way. Like, do they think that that's what oppression is? Is like the way that like Jewish people, Black people, like that we have communities. Do they conflate that with oppression?
I do not understand.
Like,
I have no idea.
We were puzzling through, and it all came up because he's like, why would Psychology Today think that any of these mayonnaise people are Black?
Nope. Nope. And nope.
Like, we're like, this is a very confusing turn of events. like, I am glad that you found a Black therapist. That's another thing like that I was thinking about even when I was working on building my therapy practice, was like, I wanted to make sure I had therapists that more people could see, because for instance, like I would completely understand if someone came to me and was like, I want a Black therapist. And I'm like, I am not Black. Like I would never be like, no, you must talk to me. It's like, no, there's layers of things that I haven't experienced that like, I would not be helpful in helping you process because I haven't experienced them.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, it's very strange when people are like, well, why can't you just see anybody? And I'm like, no, therapy. It's like, it's almost like more intimate than dating relationships sometimes.
It
You know, people
is.
can tell like your weirdest stuff, like on the regular. Oh my gosh. I was curious what's going on with the advocacy group that you did start, because I can't even imagine, like, I wouldn't want to put the pressure on you to obviously do that right now. Like right now, I'm just like, oh, just have Uno nights. I'm like, we like the Uno nights. But I was curious, I was just like, is there any dovetailing between the advocacy work you did then and like when you do feel like you're ready to go back, is that something that would COVID stuff be included in that advocacy work?
Not really COVID stuff for us. Our organization is more geared toward like advocacy for creating more equitable spaces. You know, we have workshops that are for like first day of rehearsal as we go back to work. Like, how can we make this space safe? How can we create outlets for if you are not feeling like this space is equitable, if you are feeling that this is a toxic or harmful working environment? We have artivism fellowships for Black women who, you know, have an idea but just need the support and the money to make their ideas go from like dream to reality. We have a J-term course at Columbia University where we bring lawyers and actors together in the same room to start having conversations to dismantle these systems of oppression. So like COVID safety, that honestly is a little bit more of like, I mean, it should be actors in equity. Like it should be our union doing that work or the Broadway League. Because that goes into a whole different, like that's like health and safety. Like that's like OSHA. You know what I mean? Like it requires a different level of knowledge of like medical and like public safety that is not in our wheelhouse. But I mean, we are dealing with like the effects of COVID on actors in these rehearsal rooms and like the fear and what that does to your mental wellness. Like it all kind of is intertwined, but it's like it's kind of our business, but not really our business.
It's like adjacent. It's like the
Yes.
lane next to your lane on the freeway.
Yes. It's like, and we can't really have any conversation without COVID creeping into the conversation. So, you know, it's about being as educated as possible. And I mean, half of our job is like figuring out where to send you. If you have an issue that's not us, like how can we help? Who do we know? Who can we send you to? What tools can we get you so that you can be well? I think that's what all the organizations want to do. Like we know who does what at Broadway for Racial Justice or at BTC or at BTU, and it's about like connecting people with those who have the resources so that they can get what they need. And we have these monthly, we call them coalition meetings, where all the coalitions get on a Zoom and it's your chance to say, hi, this is who I am, this is what we do, this is what we need or are looking for, this is what we provide. So that way everybody is educated, so that if I know that what you really need is from Broadway for Racial Justice, I can not only tell you that, but give you like, this is who you should call, this is the number, and this is what you should ask for. So that's another part of our work, is just
Got
it's
it.
wonderful to have all these different voices, and that's how we're all better if we work together. You know, we
Yes.
can all run parallel or perpendicular, it doesn't really matter, as long as we just like have an eye out for each other and are aware of each other. Because I mean, I've been in this business in New York for 10 years plus, and there are still organizations and I'm like, I never heard of that, and they've been around for 20 years. Like there's so many just things that I just have been completely unaware of, that it's been great to learn about during this kind of time of stillness, of like there's so many people who have been doing the work, they just haven't had the visibility. So now so many more organizations are getting, you know, their time in the sun, and now we're all able to help each other like push forward, if that makes sense.
That does, and that gives like a sense of hope for the future, because now that you're aware of these resources and that they're aware of you, that way when people do actually start going back to work, you can have better resources to access for yourself and to help each other. Like
Yes.
now that they're like on your landscape, 'cause yeah, like in kind of like, I don't know how to describe it other than like in slowing down, so that you can take all that in. Because there's no way that I would imagine that you'd be able to take in all of that information and learn all of that about different resources while you're doing your job. Like that's a whole
Yeah,
other job.
it's a lot.
I was like, so that at least I'm like, oh, that's a good silver lining.
Yes.
I was talking with the artist Allison Russell about a similar thing going on in Nashville, where like kind of like in music communities, that it's like people have become more aware of each other and more aware of resource. And I was like, oh yeah, because once we slow down, we have the time to actually like not just superficially connect. It's like we can actually, when we summon the energy, which I do always tell people, like they're, you know, like even at the start of this interview, I was like, oh, we don't have to turn on our cameras. Like people are zoomed out. It's like once we summon the energy for it, we can very like deeply connect in ways that we might not have even been able to before because of the pacing of things.
That's
Yeah.
it.
Her story was so interesting. Have you heard her music at all?
I don't think so. You said Allison Russell?
Yeah.
Trying to like write that down so I can look it up
Oh,
later.
she's amazing. And like her music ended up finding its way just to a much wider audience because of this like myriad network of people. And it wasn't that she was, you know, it's not like the LA trope, and I say this as like a person from LA, of like, oh, go out and network. It was literally just like building connections of support during a time when catastrophic things happened and we realized like, whoa, there's actually no net here. And so it was like by weaving that net together, that's actually what brought a lot of her songs to light, which is so cool. And so it's like it sounds like a similar thing is happening in that way of like, oh, we're actually weaving the safety net because we've seen now that like you said, this is traumatizing. And I'm glad that you use that word, not because I'm glad things are traumatizing, but like that's the accurate word for it.
And I think we don't, I didn't, I remember talking to my therapist and I was like, I think this is trauma. She was like, no, yeah, it's absolutely trauma. Like, cause we all, I especially like for strong folks, like trauma feels like it's gotta be like, and I hate, trigger warning, but it feels like trauma is like rape or trauma is like, something that is very specific. It usually has to be physical and mental and emotional. And it's like, no, some, what we're experiencing is also trauma. Like trauma can be defined in so many different ways, but like, yeah, it's traumatic. It really is traumatic. And it's hard also to associate trauma with doing the thing that you love. It's hard to admit that like going to work has been traumatic for me, traumatizing. Like you almost feel crazy saying that, but something about acknowledging it and saying yes, it is, kind of it helped me breathe a little easier to know I wasn't crazy and to know that what I was feeling and experiencing was not normal. At all.
No, 0% normal. Trying to perform under those circumstances, that is traumatic. Like, and the way that, like the reason why I was like, oh, that's accurate. Like trauma, you're right. A lot of people think of it as like one big baddie, essentially. But like essentially trauma is something that triggers your fight or flight response. Like it triggers your fear in a way that briefly rewires you, essentially. And you can ameliorate the effects of trauma by like working through it and processing through those emotions and reestablishing safety. But the reason why this is so traumatizing going through this is that we keep just getting bonked out of the safe zone again. And so it's hard to process trauma when you keep n not experiencing safety. Like that's actually how you heal trauma, is you foster safety. Like it's like, nah, I just made like tiny dinosaur hands of just like, I just want to foster the safety for my clients and I cannot. And yeah, I was talking with another, a wonderful person that we just hired as an ADHD coach. And we were talking about how no one seemed to have studied the Spanish flu mysteriously, but both of us went down a Spanish flu rabbit hole during high school because both of us, and it was funny, we did not go to the same school. We met as adults, but both of us remember in history class them being like, and millions of people died anyway. And like, then like things moved on to like the Roaring 20s. And we were like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like it pinged in both of our brains, like, oh, well, that's a little weird that we just talked about a huge war for like, you know, a month of class. And then there was this side note that like just a lot of people died. And then party time, we're like, wait, 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 what happened in the side note? And so both of us like have researched it. And what we both found independently and came together to talk about is that it seems like a lot of the Roaring Twenties was actually a reaction to the trauma of the 3-year experience of the Spanish flu.
Yes.
And we were like, oh, we're about to see people who are suffering from extraordinary amounts of trauma in approximately, like, at this point, it'll be like in about a year and a half, based on the timeline of that pandemic.
Mm.
We were like, this is going to be weird.
Yeah.
And like, that's what you're seeing now, is like, we're still in the midst of it, but there's going to be like this wave of like, when we do actually establish, like, you know, more safety than we have now, people are going to recognize, we hypothesize, kind of like the effects of this. And we're like, oh no.
Like, absolutely.
We're like, we're going to need like 70 people on staff. And so, yeah, I'm glad that you have it sounds like, honestly, you have a great therapist. And I'm just like, yes, we love therapists that uphold the ethics and morals of our profession, that like, we're supposed to help clients through financial hardship. That's part of our, I'm like, yes, good. Yes. Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. And like, it sounds like going through this experience has at least enabled you to, I don't know, like, thinking about the slowing down thing, I was just like, enabled you to be like, oh yeah, I can do that. And I'm curious what will happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the greatest thing that's come out of the past 2 years, is just what it's allowed artists to give themselves permission to do, be that pivot. You know, so many artists have been like suppressing, like, I want to have a business, or I honestly don't want to act anymore. You know, I want to have a home in New Orleans. Like, just seeing actors realize that like they have a life beyond the 6-day-a-week, 8-show-a-week life. Yeah. You know, I have never seen so many sourdough starters and like books being written and so many EPs and albums, like just artists allowing themselves to like dream and like give themselves permission to like be great, but like boldly. Like, so many of us, you know, somebody tells you you're an actor, so well, you can just act, but it's like, but you also write and teach and build. And like, I'm just so grateful for seeing actors who seem to be like happier and focusing more on wellness and like family. Like, how many like weddings and things have we been able to go to? And like, even if it was a Zoom baby shower, just like giving yourself permission to be like, I'm gonna take a day off here. I'm gonna spend more time with my family. I'm gonna like make some of these dreams become a reality because I have the time, and because I'm prioritizing self, and because like I can just do so much more than what the world has told me to do. So it's been a tumultuous, trying, depressing, like anxiety filled time, but to see so many people come out of that and like rise from those ashes, better people, with a greater sense of peace, mm-hmm. and self-awareness, self-confidence, I think has been the greatest part of the past 2 years. And I hope we carry this with us. Like, as things and shows and theaters are reopening, I hope we don't go back to the world that we used to live in. Like, I hope we move forward with a newness and an understanding and an awareness of the past 2 years that just has shown us we can do things differently. Like, yeah. There's so much of that too. Like, just because that's what it was doesn't mean that was right. Like, just because, well, this is what the tradition, and it's like, yeah, and people were unhappy and sick and not well. They're like barely surviving. So I don't want to go back to how I was hustling. And like, I feel like we even wore that as a badge of honor, like the hustle and not having time because I'm just so busy. And I'm so like, that's not a good thing. Like, yes, we want to work because we want to pay our bills and we want to, you know, be able to build. But if it's at the cost of like my personal wellness, it's not worth it, because none of that stuff can you take with you anyway. You know what I mean? Like, I think this has taught us the importance of family and friends and relationships and loving on each other. So I hope that we let that be the one thing that we, one of the biggest things that we take away from the last 2 years, is just a shift, a relearning and unlearning, a shifting in our perspectives, how we take care of each other, how we speak to one another, how we listen to each other. I just really hope that's the framework for moving forward.
Yes, that was so beautifully put. and I have full faith that you are going to bring that forth.
Thank you.
That when you were speaking, it harkened back to what you're saying about they can't fire all of us. I was just like, if each of us do this, it becomes a communal response of just, no, we're not going to do things the way that they were before because they weren't actually working well before.
Nope.
And if all of us get on board and be like, hey, you know how you feel actually better when you do this?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's leading by example. It's, you know, it's bringing that into the world. Like I was thinking while you were speaking about, you know, it's kind of like the old ways are thoroughly broken. And each time we keep trying to reenact them, it's like a new variant comes out. And I'm like, liberalism is very heavy handed. And so I'm just like, okay, yeah. Like, listen, listen to what the signs are. The signs saying this is the way. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I was just like, oh yeah, she's going to follow through on this one. Cause I can hear in your voice that you're like, oh no, we are very done with the old way.
Yes, we are. And if I can pass that on, cause it's a lot of times it's just like, there's this idea of like paying your dues. And like, there's a certain level of like, it's almost like self-harm. Like I have to go through a certain level of abuse and trauma to feel like I've arrived, I'm worthy. And it's like, it doesn't have to be that. It doesn't have to hurt for you to think like, oh, because I like trudged through and, you know, I was in the mud that like now I've like gained or earned my spot here. It's like, no, we don't have to just take anything, put up with anything, deal with any kind of trauma or abuse. Like, honestly, I also love like not romanticizing what we do. Like we literally play dress up for a living. Like we say words that we didn't write. We wear costumes that we did not sew. We are on the stage we didn't build, under the lights we didn't hang. Like we literally are like children. Like we get the most credit and do the least amount of work. Like if we start thinking about performing in less of a romanticized way and like bring it back down to like earth and humility, it's like, I am a professional kindergartner. Like, let me calm down. Like, nobody will die. It's not brain surgery, y'all. So it shouldn't have to be this painful and traumatic. Like, it doesn't even make sense. Like,
so
we
funny.
Put on pretend shows for a living. Everybody calm down.
Oh my God. That is so funny. Cause yeah, I think that in the immortal words of every lead singer, including me, it's always just like, can I get a little more of me in the monitor?
And
it's very much stepping out of that mindset and being like, am I always the main character?
Yes. Like, yes.
Is it okay if I am actually, in fact, part of a network?
Exactly. More of that. That's what we need, is more of that.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Thank you for being so generous with your time today. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Thank you again for listening to this episode of Why Not Both? If you liked what you heard, please make sure to like us and subscribe to us on your preferred podcast platform. You can also come hang out with us on social media. We are at WNB the podcast, both on Instagram and on Twitter. This season, we are brought to you by Under the Radar magazine. Under the Radar is a nationally distributed print, music, and entertainment magazine and website. You can find them at www.undertheradarmag.com and feel free to support them on Patreon. Extra special thanks to our producer, Laura Studeris, who is literally a rock star. Thanks again, and I look forward to seeing you next episode. We'll be right back.